show. And then I remember to click record the video. Test the sound. Everybody go.
I'm checking.
Say something.
Say something, things and stuff.
You're being
Apple sauce.
Meg turned on Sarah because she's super loud.
Very unusual.
And then once the sound checks are good and all right, we start the show, the talk show. Hello! Welcome to the Villains Talk Show, C4. And as always, I am with my co-host, Insaniac.
That's hey, everybody.
Sarah.
Yes, I have been saying things. They know my voice.
Sarah Vike. Who will that thing? Yes, I did say your name.
Just like who? Us? Us?
Oh, Sir.
I am the person.
Jeremy.
Oh, hello.
And Great Grease Goblin. Perfect. And talk random stuff, usually. And today we are breaking tradition. This person did not comment a bunch in our section and get invited onto the show. This person is our special guest. Her name is, please correct me if I'm wrong, Spruce, but you are the warden of a Canadian... Sorry, what is...
Manager of Parks Canada.
Okay. Is there an easier way to say that than I can remember?
I don't know. I'm a fire tech.
Okay, fire tech. We'll stick with fire tech.
For the government.
You're in a governmental fire tech.
Yeah,
and she...
One more excited.
A couple quick facts. A couple of quick facts I know about her that I'll elaborate on later is you were a wildfire fighter for a period of time. We'll get into that later. And the other thing was, and you just got your master's. Talk a bit about that. I believe you said the focus was lightning. Spurs? Are we still there, Spurs?
Sorry, you cut out there. Can you say again?
Yes. I said two things I know about you previously. Is you are or used to be a wild firefighter. And you're on I believe lightning was the subject.
Fire. Something around there.
It was on fire. So why don't we start with first of all, why don't you tell us about being a fire technician, or if you want to do about being a wildfire fighter, what that actually entails? Because I'll tell you what I imagine you do. For fire technician, I imagine you go out to fires and are stupid. And then for wildfire fighter, I imagine you walking in with a giant like 5,000-foot hose to like a lake. And then you and a bunch of people just stand there and just start spraying water. Just gross, gross underappreciation of what you do. But that's why you're here. But that's why you're here. Tell us a bit about what you do.
Maybe you have to scale back and start just give a little bit more of a background, because maybe that will get people into understanding. So I started my career as a junior forest warden, where... you basically take kids who are 18 to 15, and it's like a summer program. You do a bunch of forestry stuff with them. So it's to get them into forestry or forest management with NATE, which has its own forestry program. And so I started there, and then from there I transitioned to a crew for the province. And I worked there for 7 years on for forest fires by helicopter.
What? Sorry. Elaborate, please. Attack helicopter. Sorry, that's going down.
Yeah, so after that, sorry. So then I moved into more of a higher operational role into the office. So now I'm a force manager. On the ground, I do more of the higher level stuff, so burn plan. I managed more special operational aspect, and then I also went back and I got my master's of forestry, where I did a thesis-based master's, so for 2 years, and my research was on lightning fires in Canada. So that's like the overview of where I am.
Wow. Just out of curiosity, how many women actually do what you do? So I know the balance, because it doesn't, like, when I think of firefighters, I mean, I see city firefighters all the time, and they're so.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely similarities between police, firefighting, and forest firefighting. Kind of those industries are the same amount. I would say, from what I've been talking to with the U.S. counterparts, Australia, and in Canada, for forest firefighting, it's about 25% women. For police and firefighting, I think it's a little bit more than that, because they've had efforts to minimize gender gap.
Mm-hmm.
But for, unfortunately, forestry right now is a huge issue that I'm a part of, as well as the diversity and inclusion group. But there's about 25% of the entire group within the months or employed for Canada. So, I mean, my little section, it was...
There's, wow.
There's 1,300 firefighters employed.
Okay. Oh, holy Christ.
BC has around 2,500 wildfires.
Yeah. So, if anyone wants to jump in, they can. I want to hear the meat of this. I heard attack helicopter fire crew, and
that is what I heard as well.
That's like, please explain.
It's not that okay. So there's three types of crews. There's a unit crew, which is a 20-man crew. There's an initial attack crew, which is a 4-person crew. And then there's an extended attack crew, which is a 7-man crew. So I was on a 4-person initial attack crew, and so that was after all summer. And I was just fly around the forest and around communities, fight via helicopter, because that's the fastest way of getting to fires. So, I mean, it's not like I have helicopters. That's not, you can hover exit, which, yes, you exit helicopter in motion.
Do you have a parachute?
In full power? No. So, Paratac is in BC.
Oh.
Alberta does not do that. They do rappel.
So, you rappel. Wait.
Human excursion.
So, you military rappel down. From a helicopter that's like, what, like 50 feet up?
I think the high 150.
Oh my god. That is jumping out of a helicopter.
That's what it sounds like to some degree.
It's called the human external cargo, so you're actually slung. So you're outside of the helicopter, put on the long line into your harness, pull you up outside. That's actually the safest way.
What's the most unsafe way you've exited a helicopter?
I can't say that.
That's some pretty. This is only villains here, Spruce. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
This is only the villains.
Lots of questionable things.
Only the villains here.
What do you do from the helicopter? Like, what? How do you attack the fire from that?
That was my question. Good call.
So, yeah, the whole goal is to get personnel into the fire with our equipment. So really more about the helicopter drops us off as close as we can get, and then we hike through the bush with our gear, and then we fight the fire that way, and then the helicopter takes its bucket, and it'll bucket water while we're on our way in there, but we're not, like, you can't actually bucket water. It has to be completely empty, so... It's not like wherever where you're in the helicopter and you've got the helitorch that's hung at the base of the, and then anything's on fire is really cool.
Whoa, we're backing up. So, like, I heard helitorch, I heard bucket, and I still have no idea what you're fighting a fire with. All I'm imagining is you and a bunch of, like, 4 canisters of, like, fire extinguishers just running through. Like, so let's...
That sounds pretty close.
So,
buckets of water.
Let's start from the forward back, because the coolest thing is hella. Please
explain. Burn fires to fight fires, I imagine, right?
So I imagine here, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is a giant flamethrower attached to a helicopter.
That's
what?
You can do Dragon Balls, which are way more fun.
Are they over 9,000? Tell me they're over 9,000!
They origin red.
That's the pressure of the fuel, over 9,000.
Oh my god. So you can do Dragon Balls, what else?
I've definitely done a sketchy. I don't want to talk about that. That was scary. I don't know.
Okay, just tell your stories. We're all here to hear them.
Yeah, well, I'm within a province or territory that, let's just say, doesn't have the greatest aviation regulations or wildfire regulations. And
okay.
We're doing a prescribed burn.
Okay.
And they have a helitorch available or ping pong balls. So the.
What, you just, like, hit ping pong ball? So many questions. No.
It's a handheld canister with diesel fuel in it, and you can light it, and it'll start, like, a little fire.
It's flamethrower.
Yeah.
But it's handheld. It's really tiny.
A flamethrower.
What am I doing with my life?
Most flamethrowers are handheld.
What am I doing with my life?
So, what happened was
you're it's
on the outside of the helicopter with the tiny flamethrower, and then this other guy held his legs in the helicopter while he just like went along the tree line.
Nice. Oh my goodness!
So loud.
That's so terrifying.
Got it up, huh?
That just sounds like a good time.
Like, seriously, what are we doing with our lives? Join wildfire? Like, what?
I told you to. I told you.
I agree. Oh my lord. I could. Oh my god.
You could be burning things.
So,
and getting paid for it.
I assume you're probably not afraid of fire then.
You can't be afraid of fire.
Yeah. Are you afraid of fire, Spruce? Is that something that haunts you at night?
Or others?
Sometimes. I've been caught in two particular situations where definitely thought I might be burned alive.
That's a scary situation.
Can you share one of them? You don't have to if you don't want to.
Or however you feel comfortable, yeah.
Yeah, but if
no, you... No, yeah, so... I was on a fire a couple years ago, and unfortunately, the boat owners in with about 100 pounds of gear each, and so it was quite a bit. And we were hiking through, I want to say two, but you guys don't know what that is. Like pure spruce stands, so really, really tight stands. You're in the muskeg, so it's really watery. So it takes a lot of effort to hike 100 meters.
Feels like Bob kind of.
Yeah, so we're exhausted, dehydrated, and we finally get to the fire, and it starts blowing up. So we had just hit it, and we see this wall flame, probably, like, just all the crowns burning it wary, and we didn't know what else to do because we were in front of it, and it was just quite large in size, and because we had couldn't get out, and we didn't really have a helicopter over us, and luckily, we had these bombers who just... saw kind of this iron and came over just to check it out and saw us there. And so we owed it. And there's a bird dog who's like this guy, really very experienced fire guy where the farmers go. So he kind of saw us and he came over to read us it out, like evacuate, and we put in. And we had one guy who actually, and he cramped up and couldn't move. So it became an emergency situation. And so he had water bombers and retardant just shoot right on top of us. And it was crazy because you have these massive planes like right on the road. And luckily everything was fine, but that was really scary. And then we got a picture. Did not like that. So that's not
hot damn.
See ya.
And did you want to talk about the other time or?
I don't know.
That's fine.
Kind of the same story. You lose situational awareness. You get caught in places you shouldn't be.
Especially when you're traveling through woods you might not be familiar with.
What do you actually fight the fire with? Like, when you get dropped in off your helicopter, you just rappel down 100 feet. So you rappel 100 feet out of this helicopter. What's on you? Like, what are you, like, I joke that you have fire extinguishers, but, like, literally, you said you hike in for 5 kilometers. What the fuck are you carrying?
Yeah, first of all, I'm not rappelled. I am a helitack, so very different, just so you know, because there is a huge,
rappel. I don't know. Well,
there's a click for the rappel squad, you know, like they.
I see. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize those posh rappellers would be so angry at my miss. Like,
they got the cool seat at the cafeteria.
they sit at the front. They get to eat first. Everyone else gets the plastic shit ones.
Yeah, like deck chairs.
Exactly. Oh, never mind. It's for everyone now. Those repellers don't get to their comfy seats no more.
No, everyone.
All right, but
or it's that or under ass.
But yeah, when you like a fire, what do you have on you?
Yeah, so mostly my crew would carry a pump, and then you carry boxes of hose. That's pretty hard to fight fires, obviously, with water. If you're in the northern regions where there is water, if not, that's a different story. But we have hand tools, so that's Pulaskis, axes.
What's a Pulaski?
And then a Pulaski. Oh, I love Pulaskis. It's in the front and an axe.
Wait. They're an ass head in the front, an ass head in the back. Perfect. Sweet.
Okay, well, they actually are really cool.
Alright, so what are they? They're an axe head in the front, and what's in the back?
Like a think of an ike, and then flatten it.
Like a Dex bike. Like a Dex bike.
You should look it up. I don't really know. It's like a flat.
Good idea.
Sounds like Jeremy's job.
Sounds almost like a mining thing.
Jeremy!
Sounds like a Jeremy job.
Sir Jeremy!
I need blinks. So, have you actually had to fell a tree to avoid fires?
Oh, man, I have my level 3 certificate saw. I love it.
Nice.
Yeah, so falling trees is a huge thing that we...
So wait, you get to hold a fire flamethrower, you have an axe,
a fire thrower.
You have an axe, and you have a fucking chainsaw. So like, if zombies...
Standard fire axe.
Dude, if something ever happened, I would just go to a watch station. You guys are ready for everything. Jesus!
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, and like, if anyone invaded, like, no wonder they scared the wilderness. There's a bunch of you people out there. I bet you got your rifle license too.
Who knew they had the pile of flamethrowers just hiding in the fucking back?
I wouldn't have guessed that.
Me neither.
I honestly wouldn't have it either before this conversation.
Oh, I also have my
pile
license, but that's not
as well. I knew it. Be scared of these audience. They are the true minions.
God, most people that work wildfire are from the farm, okay? They go with takeout shooting on the weekend.
Rest on the side.
I feel a little hate there. I feel a little...
Oh, no, man. That was my favorite pastime. That was so much fun.
What other pastimes do you do out there? Like, I'm sure there's some fun days. What's in the life of a fire tech / wildfire?
Do you eat lunch like the rest of us?
Do you even have breakfast? Hard hitting questions, guys.
Sounds madly tough.
I mean, if I'm on a fire, I'm 16-hour days.
Been there.
So.
All right, but not on a fire. I mean a non-fire day. I mean like a regular non-fire, beautiful summer day at the fire station in the middle of buttfuck nowhere.
Oh, you play a bunch of crib.
I love it already.
I love it already.
I have a bone crib board. It's right here. I'll show it off.
That's cool.
Made of pure bone. Oh, I love this crib board.
I can't see the details. I'll just send it.
Do you do? It's actually an ox bone, actually. But
Oh, okay. That's fancy.
Is it an ox bone?
Or
you got bone bones.
I'm pretty sure it is. Now you're making me...
an ox bone.
Or like a cow bone?
No, I mean, it depends on where...
It's definitely a bone, you can see, because it's not an antler. Anyway, back to you. So that's all you do is play, you know, I'm sure, like, I wasn't going to say you have computer or TV play or shit, but do you just play cards? Like, you don't go camping? I'm sure you...
Card camping.
No? Like a structure? Or do you actually camp out the whole time?
Well, it's a structure, but, you know, it's in the middle of the woods.
Wait. Is that what you call camping in Saniac?
Some people have a
Well, you know who the glamper of the group is now.
I did road camping probably like a couple weeks ago when I came to Ontario. Oh. It was a little rough and low to even get
No. Camping in my RV. Oh, so hard. If only there was more amenities.
What's that, Mr. Passive Aggressive? I wish I could talk more about myself.
All right. Well, anyone else have any more questions?
What do we do? Why do you do this? What drew you to it?
The voice is outside. Sure.
What makes you excited? Why does anyone do anything? I don't know. I love forestry. I love the forest, and I love being out in the wilderness. It's probably the greatest things ever. People in the city don't appreciate the beauty that the wilderness has to offer, and being out there has some type of stillness and calmness, and I love it. And it mostly is for the outdoors.
Ooh, I understand.
I hate that too. My peaceful moments, I go to the woods to read comics.
That sounds really great.
Anyone else? We have a whole list. Oh, we have a comment. Says she loves fire. Does she? Do you love fire? Ooh, it's a great question.
Of course, you get to blow things up. I know.
Of course.
I'm a little bit of a pyromaniac. I can't explain it. It's so much fun when you take a bottle of diesel and you hit the fire and it creates like little explosion. That's also really fun.
I mean, I'm a cook. I love fire.
Yeah, that's very true.
Oh, man. Well, if I ever need to change my course of my life, no, wildfire will always be waiting for me. I've literally been a pyromaniac. God.
Yeah, that's pretty
cool. I just want to shoot a giant flamethrower out of a helicopter now. It's like a life goal I never knew I had.
I mean, you used to do this, like, you could
give you a flamethrower. Talk to Elon Musk.
It's not a flamethrower.
Give you a not a flamethrower.
Sir Jeremy has
no one continued. He won't give you.
No, are they discontinued?
You have to get them. Yeah, you have to get them from Amazon now for $10.
Oh, of course, you got to get them from Amazon now.
You have to find selling it first of all.
Jeremy posted a link of that of a Pulaski. It's a special hand tool in fire, which combines an axe, a daze in one, a mattock that is rigid handle wood. Blah blah. No. Oh. Good for constructing fire breaks, chop
wood. It's like that makes me think of the typical kind of fire axe. You know, I don't, or like sometimes you have the fire axes, but they have a little more of a wedge at the end,
mm-hmm.
or like a spike, I guess, for chipping through wood.
Makes sense.
Not so much that flat chisel. It's a two kind of fire axes.
So, if someone wants to get into what you do, how would they start?
So the biggest of the job, and I would say is the hardest part of the job, is No, it's not as it was, to be honest. It's like a mix between, has anyone ever taken the PEAR test for RCMP or police?
No, I've heard it's rough.
I did. No, it's back here.
In my view, I understand how people don't pass that, but it's way harder than the PEAR test, but it is not as hard as the structural test. So it's like an in-between.
Structural test?
Yeah,
you describe, you don't say for those without context.
To be a structural firefighter, you run for 20 minutes max. So you're hooked up to this machine. So your airway is hovering treadmill, and they increase the speed and the incline 20 minutes, and you go as fast as you can. Like, they could go really fast, and you like outrun sprint. But if your VO2 max hits, then you're done and you don't get in. So you basically want to be able to run 20 minutes with your VO2 max being really low, but you're on this very steep incline running really fast.
Yes, V2 max. Oh, those
guys. How much oxygen you
have? Yeah,
how much breathing?
If you breathe too fast, you're taking in your asthma, or if you're getting smoke inhalation, you know.
So art is, you have a 60-pound... There is a ramp, and it's probably about 2 meters tall, and you basically go ramp with this 60-pound bag 25 laps, there and back on lap. You do that, and then it's about 20 pounds of resistance. You do it times, and then you go around the ramp twice in your 60-pound bag. And you have to do it in under 14 minutes.
Oh, what training?
I think you gave me a month. I could probably do it. That doesn't sound too bad, actually. It would take me a month, not a year for some people, maniac.
I said some training. I got to say, that takes a year.
I'm gonna
use just day training.
If I'm gonna be firing Dragon Balls everywhere, man, take a year to do any kind of training. If I'm gonna do it right.
Yeah, you gotta stop and smoke a couple times and then get to it.
So that's what it takes to get in. But then, so you're new. You just got in. What are you most going to be doing? Just being part of like a 20-man crew, going up trees, fighting some fires.
Ride all the training. So you go to this 10-day training, and then you do your chainsaw course. Like they do the training after that. So once you pass the fit test and you're willing to do the training, crew, whether that's the 20-man crew or the 4-man crew, teach you everything on the job.
Sounds very Canadian. Hey, you'll get it when you get there. You'll figure it out.
You'll learn it fast.
It's not that hard, buddy.
We like to call it trial by fire, literally.
Oh, it's so lame, but so true.
That's how I've been initiated to most jobs here.
Here's the
busiest night. Have fun. So, this is your first day. You'll get it.
Let's move away from the wildfire a bit. Moving Masters, because I had a chance to read, and I actually was watching at least part of your part of your argument is what it is. You argue to other, you present to a bunch of different professors.
Defense?
Yes, that's what they're called.
It was a defense.
Yes. So I found, because you talk about fire a lot, but it's mostly around lightning. You think it was what, lightning causing random fires?
So my topic was identifying, analyzing spatial temporal patterns of lightning ignited wildfires in 1981 to 2018.
Really, even though it was lightning, it was still focused on the fire.
Should be like, yeah, distill that a little bit.
Like unrecognizing where lightning is going to hit, I think. To prevent it.
Do we have a four kids version of Idol?
I love lightning fires in Canada. See, or basically where lightning fires happen spatially on the landscape and distributions the same each year for 37 years. And I want to know patterns. Say in East Columbia, where they're fired every year in this one little parcel of land. So I basically divided the entire landscape, kilometer parcels, and then I counted the fires in each parcel, and then I looked at all of that spatially for 37 years and tried to gauge which parcels of land experienced fires each year.
What's the answer? Yes?
What would that research look like to prevent like those types of fires, or to say to recognize them before they happen?
I can't speak to that. It's a lot of machine learning and a lot of AI that they're doing right now at the CFS. My findings found that yes, there is actually there's an end of lightning fires over that. There's an increasing trend in southeastern-ish Columbia and northern Alberta, as well as central parts of Saskatchewan and Manitoba. from Lake Maria, and then like Fernie up the Kootenai Pass to like Revelstoke area, kind of. So that was interesting. Did a lot of other statistics that I go on in advance.
So you you prove that that areas where lightning
there's patterns over time. Yes, in certain
you
areas.
Proved that makes sense. Makes sense.
Yeah, so random. It's not random.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
So like all weather, I would imagine it forms under certain conditions.
Exactly. So,
what?
There are different factors, so like topography of an area, local exposure aspect, that basically influence fires, so that, you know, an area, especially in southeastern BC, I mean, you have high topography, it's mountainous terrain, obviously, and you have certain aspects, and fuel comes back in a way so that you always have fire there, because the fuel is always really dry, because it's in this kind of microclimate where it gets a lot of sun, not a lot of rain, and you always have convective activity that's happening right near the range, so you get a bunch of lightning activity. So there's always lightning fires there, and they're always big to get really big.
Yeah, it's like a little lightning rod of sorts, and it's attracted to that area.
And you're using this information so that you or any government can basically predict lightning in these areas so as to prevent fires from going awry. Fires will come.
No. I did not predict lightning. So lightning density or strike densities are different than lightning fires. So, for example, Alberta has roughly 1,300 lightning strikes per one fire. BC has 40 fire.
Wow. Oh, wow.
So it's really different, and that's a different topic than what I did. I just looked at lightning fires, so strikes that actually result in a fire. But in order to map, you would have to really look at lightning and the weather phenomena that are associated with that. So that's a little bit more in depth than what I did. I just looked at where lightning fires occurred.
Okay. Did you feel that yourself, you're now more than overqualified to stand on television and tell people what the weather is?
Meteorologist? I have a meteorologist degree.
The question stands.
Just yet.
I didn't hear so I'm going to say yes.
You're confusing a lot of things. No.
That he does that all the time. That's his shtick on the show so far.
Meteorologist.
Someone needs to be funny.
Yeah, it's funny looking more like. That's why this camera's on.
Oh, exactly why my camera's on.
I kind of have a question. Like, through your fires and whatnot that you dealt with, I imagine there you end up running into a number of animals that are fleeing from the scene or are hurt. You guys end up having to have certain protocols to help them or, you know, move them to a different area, perhaps, or
watch them burn,
something like that, you know, or just maybe you just want some, you know, some cooked, well done. But that's
hey, look at all those deers! Fireball, fireball, fireball! Ah, Benson.
Anyone that woos is a guilty one. If anyone gets that, we'll check it.
Yep.
And on the way of animals. Is there like some special technique in a way to aid them?
Or have you ever ran into one?
Or ran into them.
Yeah, like you're in the wilderness. In one.
The amount of one I have seen is
understandable.
Directed to joy fires. A pretty broad subject.
Yes.
I've never seen animals from a wildfire.
I think there's a huge story there. Come on.
At the one fire I was on in northern Alberta, we came across barred bison, which obviously died in the fire. It couldn't be or whatever. So definitely see Murray. That was a massive fire, and I saw a bunch of black bears fleeing, but they fleed into town. So it wasn't like I saw the flame front animals running.
Yeah, no, that's not exactly what I meant. But I meant, on the occasion, if you run into an animal.
Epic image, walking together with this flamethrower and just animals running. I'm going to fight this fire with more fire.
But There's no protocol. I mean, I've BlackBerry lost count for sure.
Have you had to aid any animals? Like, I imagine, you know, you start from animal, but I'm curious if you have to.
I've got a lot. There's only been a couple.
Okay. Well, stuff that we put together, you had a chance to kind of look at. Why don't you, for the last 15, run through them? And if we've answered some already, we'll just skip those. But the best you can, start from where it says question.
Start with Sir Jeremy. He needs to say something this session.
Yeah.
Question list on the stick. Here we go. What's the difference between ground and sky lightning? I don't know what that means. I don't.
Okay, next question.
What's it like the first time dropping from a helicopter to an active fire? Oh, it's a rush. Why do you think I do this? What drew you from wildfire to study lightning and its habitat? So I did, technically my degree is in forestry with a concentration in wildfire sciences. But I have a background, and my professor at university is one of the top wildfire scientists in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So actually I was sought out from him because I had the fire experience, so that it just kind of worked out in both ways for me. I think we talked about that. What is the methodology you've used during your master's? You either developed or just borrowed, and why did it help? Huh, that's an interesting question.
You're welcome.
Oh, is that you?
Yep.
Interesting. No.
The master's ceremonies.
I didn't follow necessarily a new... I didn't follow a structured methodology, but I didn't follow a new methodology. I did a bunch of statistics. It was heavily statistics-based, math-based, was most of my thesis. And then I did a bunch of GIS, ArcGIS work, which hasn't really been published before in the wildfire sciences, besides Jen Beverly, who published some of it. But she's really the only wildfire scientist that's done that kind of GIS work that I did do, because I did statistics and GIS, which is like the Getty-Sword statistic, the Mon-Kendall statistic, all of that stuff. So it was kind of a mashup, I guess.
Okay.
But yeah, it gets really technical, I guess. I just want to say there's no real methodology. Like, there is a methodology, but there's not like a structured methodology in...
Okay.
From there, what are some of the best campgrounds you've been to? Richardson.
Wait, write
Richardson
this down.
Backcountry.
Write this down. Someone write this down. What were those?
Anyone know where the Richardson is?
No idea.
Okay, so the Richardson is north of Fort McMurray, a natural sand dune. They're about 30 meters in height, and you can actually go sandboarding. It's really cool.
That sounds interesting.
It is really cool. There's a bunch of campsites back there. To get there, it's about an hour or so, but I highly recommend if you ever want to go, or bring a canoe. So I had a crew that portaged. You can go down the Richardson, and beautiful camping spots and some of the best fishing ever if you're a huge fisherman. So that's a great camp spot for backcountry stuff. Also going down the Peaver is really fun if you want to do portage bear. Beautiful country. A lot of bears.
Bring bear mace.
Well, I would bring a shotgun.
All right.
With slugs or scattershot?
No, what? Who scatters you? Where are you? I mean, what's the horn? I wouldn't use... I mean, you could bring bear spray... But I would bring a horn and or a shotgun.
Right? I never thought in my life I would hear someone go, scatter, bring the slugs.
Why would...
Oh, blow that bear's head clean off. All right, keep going.
Okay,
What are some ways to know if water is safe to drink? And if it's not safe, how can you make it safe? Well, how to know if water is safe? Well, if you get fever fever, it's definitely not safe.
No shit. If I'm dying of dehydration, I know that's snow.
I think preemptively might be the question.
Thank you.
You can get, well, this is a camping thing, but you can get filters that just filter out the water. And those are pretty safe. And then you can also get ionized pills that you put your water in, and then you put in your water bottle, and it within 30 minutes, it's safe to drink. I've done that before.
What if you're... Sorry, I was going to say, what if you're insaniac and you're lost in the woods without any of these preparatory measures?
Do you think I don't know how to survive in the woods? I actually took survival.
Boil.
I stick with what I said. Water. I stick with what I said. Boil! Boil.
I literally road camped, like I said, when I came to Ontario.
I heard Royd camp. I think everyone else did.
Royd
camp. Got it.
Camps, yeah.
Makes so much sense. That's about me. What is a Royd camping?
That sounds like something.
What is a Royd camp? Well, I thought you wanted to become a baseball star. Everyone goes to Royd camp if they're baseball.
See the sports.
Please, Bruce.
So, this is a question, but it's asked. I'm not going to type it all out, though.
Yeah, that would be like, wait, buddy. He just said, like, and I told you. That's not gonna actually be something that is in your area of expertise, so it's all good.
Okay.
Musically, he was not very specific.
That's par for the
course. It really is.
Vague topic for this week.
Going.
Okay, sorry. Best and worst parts of what I do. Best part, lighting shit on fire. Worst part is the people. There are some great people. I absolutely love people.
People suck.
You can get really bad eggs.
People suck.
And they're negative, they hate it, and you spend so much time with them, it's unfortunate.
But there's
those in every job.
Construction. There's always one guy who fucks the dog. Person who
or
just
burns down the kitchen or in the restaurant.
Or burns the kitchen. Yeah, that's another one. That's an idiot. Never fired someone so fast.
People that grab their tongs when they drop them in the deep fryer.
Oh God. Oh, I did knife dog.
I could see you.
Please continue, Spruce.
Okay. Kinds of fire. There are three types: ground, surface fire, and crown fire. And that's just where in the stand it's burning.
In the stand? Like
yes,
bleachers?
In a forest.
Oh, oh. In the stand. Like bleachers?
Where when they're in the you know, in the stadium, John. It's where everyone sits and watches the fire. It's the best seat in the house, clearly.
Please keep going.
So fire marshal, I think, is structural. There's no such thing as fire marshals in forestry. Fire warden is also not a forestry thing. There is a park warden, which is enforcement, but there are fire technicians and fire management officers. There's also
what's the difference between
like
those two then?
Chiefs. So a fire tech is the lowest on the totem pole, if we're going that way. They do like the weather. They interact with the crews. So does the fire officer, but they do more high-level operations. So they're kind of an IC3, maybe 2, whereas a fire tech is an IC3 mm-hmm. or 4 in the incident command system, if you know what incident command is. So mm-hmm. incident 4 is lower because the lower the number, so an incident commander 1 is like the top dog.
Mm.
And then you have incident commander 2, 3, 4, and 5. So you do it. It's a military thing, but it works that way. So
now, correct me if I'm wrong. You said you, as the fire tech, do the weather, as in read the weather out on a audio said or some way that is communicated to others that this is the weather.
Yeah, you take temperature. Precipitation, relative humidity, wind speeds, and directions. And then you kind of do like the FFMC, the DNC, the DC, ISI, stuff like that.
It's like the weather has something to do with the fires and the forest and how things.
Yeah. Like
it's weird.
You calculate rates of
weird
stress
how that
in
works.
A group
and you're not a meteorologist.
I'm not a meteorologist, no.
Please continue. Please continue.
Moving on.
Yes, please.
Do you mostly stick to forested areas? Oh, sorry.
Oh. Go, skip that one. Go down.
I've never lived in a fire tower. I've been to many, and I've gone up, and they're really cool, but no, fire people are weird. Or fire tower people are weird. Very special person to live in the forest alone.
I'm really up there, yeah. It's like isolationists.
Oh my god. There's a guy, he's a really cool guy. He's crazy, but he's good. Fire tower guy for about 20 years.
How good the story start.
Tell me the story of how he saves these cats and then he brings them out to him. And one time he loved this cat, had him for 5 or something. And the cat was outside and he was up in his tower and he saw this bear like stalking his cat. He like screamed to this cat to come in, but the cat wouldn't. Anyways, he's like, I sat on the porch and just watched this bear eat my cat.
It always starts with a crazy guy who's really nice.
Why were we talking about the crazy people you meet in the forest? Why did this just come up now?
Crazy shit that goes on.
Can we end on that? Tell us more crazy shit.
I can come back. I've never played Firewatch. I don't know that game.
Oh, that's too bad.
It's a game of being a tower person.
Yeah, you're a fire tower.
And going crazy.
Yeah.
Took away the whole plot.
That's it. That's all the questions.
Yeah. So let's end the story because we got about it. We got 3 minutes left. Tell us the craziest thing or person you've ever seen out in the forest.
Kid of two. Yeah. There's two. Okay.
Oh.
Actually, there's three. There's three.
Please.
We'll start with number one. Okay. There was an old fire tower guy. He'd been in a fire tower for, I think, 40 years. And he used to write stories. And his stories got passed down.
Salacious stories?
He writes.
Sounds like our local writer.
Real stories. Yeah. And I met him right before he died. He died of a heart attack. But... yeah, anyways. He said he was visited one night by aliens. Who knows if that's true? Who knows?
He said, come back next week for our next topic. Aliens.
So that was crazy. What was the other one? There's two. I know the one. Okay. I cannot confirm or deny that this happened. It was told to me. And I'll leave it up to you guys this time. So, there was a crew on watch in the forest. They're at a tower. And a Cessna, so like a tiny person plane, and landed on me. Two guys came out with a big black, like, duffel bag. Walked into the forest, were gone for 6 hours, came out after 6 hours, with my got in the crew, they searched, didn't know, and nothing that had been found.
Raving.
Didn't bother to question them when they landed, like, you know, this isn't your runway.
Yeah, well, it's Crown Land, so anyone can actually land.
Oh, really? I see. That's interesting.
Very interesting.
I didn't know that. But still, it's interesting. No one would be like, hey.
Well. With that, I think we've come full circle from...
Wait, I have one more!
Go for it, Spruce!
It's a mystery, though, okay? You guys have to figure it out. There's a tower near Hinton, Alberta.
Okay.
There's a woman...
Is that buried treasure?
Well, she was the tower person for, I think, 16 years or something. Anyways, she went missing when she missed her check-in. Someone drove out there, and they found that her bed sheets, like, her bed was completely taken apart, so it was just the mattress. Nothing else was askew.
Nothing. They looked everywhere for her. They're still searching. It's a mystery. They have no idea. Nobody knows what happened.
Campfire story. I wish C4 had a spooky flashlight over this.
I mean, my first thought is maybe the one instance you just told us and the other instance are not mutually exclusive?
Well, they have a part. Okay. 12, I think. Maybe 21.
Yeah, that no, I blame aliens. But that being said, thank you, Spruce. Yeah, thanks, Spruce. This has been awesome.
It's been very informative.
I can we very much
slightly more excited to know that firefighters have flamethrowers.
Oh god, me too. Oh man, that is highlight of the week.
That pretty much sells it.
Dragon Ball.
Yeah, I'm sure the Germans had different names for theirs too, but you know.
Anyway. Thank you all. I'm sorry people had nothing better to do, but I hope you had a great time here. This was a great conversation. I'm C4. With me always is Insaniac, Sarah Vike, Sir Jeremy, the Great Grease Goblin, our special guest, Spruce. And we are the villains of the Villains Talk Show. Please follow us, clicking the follow button, or, you know, download the free app. It's free, it's just an app. Or follow Insaniac on his thing, or Patreon, or those things. And they cross hatch and
social media.
Everything does the things, and you know we all participate in things, and you know makes you and you know what together. you know what maybe you should go subscribe to some other channels too, like I'm trying to think of some of the top of my head, like Vodi Video. Ever heard of Vodi Video? You should go see him, he's great. Or Summoning Salt. Fuck, he just put out a new video.
Check out the 5 Cent Freak Show.
Ooh, 5 Cent Freak Show is great. Aether Hub, if you like MTG lore.
Really entertaining on YouTube.
God, there's gotta be other things we can plug. We are not affiliated with any of these. We're just plugging them because we're evil. Subscribe.
Some of us are affiliated too.
And we're done.